Welcome back to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations, featuring rock and roll expert and fellow Clevelander, a longtime friend of mine, Frank Ost. Frankie, welcome to Season 3.
Wow, it's great to be here.
Episode 1's going to feature Santana as our spotlight artist. Let's start as we always do, as we run down the list in inverse order. Hall of Fame inductees, 1992, Booker T and the MGs. The big hit in 1962 was Green Onions.
Fantastic group. Roots of rhythm and blues. Backing band for a whole lot of people.
What are your first thoughts when I say, hello, I'm Johnny Cash?
Well, legendary. I realize that he comes from the country genre. But I think when my eyes got open to him was very late in his career when he did that remake of Nine Inch Nails' Hurt.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was hurtful, is what it was.
I don't think I'd ever heard anything as honest in my life.
Painful.
It is. It's painful to listen to it, but just genius. Just fantastic. And that led me to go back and listen to some other stuff from his. And he's a storyteller and a fantastic musician.
Ring of Fire was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Folsom Prison Blues, unbelievable song. Walk the Line. The movie was fantastic, too, mm-hmm. starring Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon.
That's right, yeah.
Academy Award for that. I think it was 2005. Johnny Cash, I got with him in 1969 with his CBS TV show. It was on from then until 72.
Remember
That's
we right.
talked about how many people had their own show and Johnny Cash?
That was another one,
was
yeah.
one of them.
Absolutely.
Good stuff, The Man in Black. Isley Brothers. What'd you think?
Well, my favorite Isley Brothers record is Fight the Power, one
oh,
of their
yeah,
later
that's
ones
a good
from
one.
the mid-70s on an album called The Heat Is On. And boy, that was a fantastic record. And they started, of course, much earlier. Wow, they go back to the 50s, I believe.
Yeah, the 50s. They were putting albums out every year until mm-hmm. about 1987.
Yep. Absolutely.
Dead Lady and Harvest for the World.
Yes, absolutely.
For the Love of You.
And, of course, I think they did the original version of Twist and Shout.
Mm-hmm. And then Rod Stewart and Ronnie Isley had the remake of This Old Heart of Mine, the old Isley Brothers.
That's right.
From long ago.
Great stuff.
Jimi Hendrix Experience, inducted into the Rock Hall in 1992.
The three of them only made three records, but boy, what records they were. Turned the world on its head, definitely.
Now, of course, the Rock Hall has the rule 25 years prior to that you start recording, and that sounds about right. 1967 would have been the first year that Jimi Hendrix started recording.
That's right.
And at one point was actually opening for the Monkees on tour.
That must have been some kind of concert to see.
Sam and Dave.
Great stuff, and they were given a second life by the Blues Brothers, of all people. You know, kind of brought their music back to the forefront.
And the Yardbirds, Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page and the gang. Eric Clapton, a three-time Rock Hall inductee.
Well, I was thinking, looking at this list, boy, there couldn't have been. This defines the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because you literally had four of the greatest rock and roll guitar players of all time. And I'm talking four of the top five, with Jimi Hendrix, of course, Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, and Jeff Beck all being inducted between Jimi Hendrix Experience and the Yardbirds.
My favorite of theirs is probably For Your Love. That's such a great song.
Yeah.
But everything by the Yardbirds, especially the hits, everything was cool by me.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I remember a song by the name of Over Under Sideways Down that just I used to play it. About 2 minutes and 20 seconds of great stuff.
That was good class. Hall of Fame inductees 1992 as we move toward the 80s. They're getting better. You know, they're
absolutely.
Those are the top-notch artists right there, weren't they?
Oh, sure.
So, Frankie, this is something we haven't been able to talk about. The concert calendar is coming. We haven't talked about it because when we started our podcast, we were about, halfway through the pandemic.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
nothing was going on.
No, shows were on hold or just canceled. Rolling Stones, the No Filter 2020 tour, does not have any rescheduled dates, so we'll hang on to those tickets.
Okay.
Rescheduled concerts, though, Elton John, he'll be at Progressive Field in Cleveland. That's a nice little outdoor venue. Baseball field, end of July 2022.
Yeah, better catch him this time around because, you know, there might not be too many others.
Yeah, the Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour.
Exactly.
The never-ending Elton John Farewell Tour coming to Cleveland. He's going to be overseas for a long time, and then New Orleans, I believe, first of the year, and then do some inside venues, and then when the weather improves next year, come outside. Tickets for the Elton John Progressive Field Show are on sale in just a couple of days.
Wow.
June the 30th. It's sure to sell out.
Mm-hmm.
Styx is on the road again. Ann Wilson begins a short tour. Foreigner, 121-city tour, beginning earlier this month in Iowa. It'll be going at least through November. Some may or may not be coming to Cleveland, but we want to kind of announce where shows are going because other people are listening in other parts of the country.
Sure, absolutely.
The Eagles, Styx, as we mentioned. Todd Rundgren is coming to town. MGM Grand, MGM Theater. At Northfield Park, November 6th and 7th. He's due to play Cincinnati on Saturday, October 30th, so we may or may not see him on stage at the induction ceremony.
Exactly.
He's in the right state. Maybe he'll bop up from the Queen City. What do you think?
Exactly.
Springsteen on Broadway. You know, the show that won a special Tony Award. I priced out the tickets starting at $348 per. Want
to
go?
Good grief. I'd love to go, but wow. $348 for a last row.
That's a lot
Sounds
of money.
Sounds great.
Different world in the Big Apple, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
He's got like a 10-song set. He intersperses the spoken word, and it's supposed to be a really good show. I wouldn't mind seeing Chicago again. They're coming to the MGM. Also, the Monkees, my sister and I are going.
Oh, very nice.
My sister and I are going. November 3rd, it's the Farewell Tour. It's Mickey and Michael Nesmith.
Okay.
And James Taylor and Jackson Browne will be at Blossom Music Center. That date has been set for quite some time. That'll be Saturday, the 31st of July at Blossom. Jimmy Buffett's playing the River Bend Music Center in Cincinnati on July 13th. Santana, today's featured artist, will be with Earth, Wind, and Fire. On Saturday, July 9th, 2022, not this July, but next July. But in the meantime, if you're heading out to Vegas at the end of August, you can see Santana. They'll be performing for 8 shows at the House of Blues starting August 25th.
Terrific.
So that if we make it out
would
to
be
Vegas.
One good concert.
Yeah, that should be good. So that's what's coming up, at least in the next month. Some shows are already in the books and not a whole lot in July. But as we head toward July and August, you'll see more and more shows getting on the calendar.
Definitely.
It's good to see. Today in Rock History, Frankie, as we kick off season 3, it's June 28th, and birthdays belong to Richard Rodgers, Mel Brooks, Gilda Radner.
Wow.
Kathy Bates, John Elway, a fan of Cleveland?
Oh, boy, no.
Cleveland,
no.
Not a big John Elway fan over the years. Kelly Pickler, of course, American Idol fame. She's had her own TV show over the years, and you know who Kelly Pickler is. And my daughter, Michelle.
Okay.
And Frank Ost.
Who knew?
Who knew? Little Frank Ost was going to someday be the rock and roll legend that he is.
Absolutely.
The rock and roll expert, Frank Ost.
Yeah, it just shows you, and if you listen to enough records, you learn something sooner or later.
Today in Rock History, June 28th, 1965, Where the Action Is, hosted by Dick Clark. He was as ubiquitous then as Ryan Seacrest is now.
What a great show that Where the Action Is.
Yeah, premiered on ABC TV. Guests include Jan and Dean and Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Yeah, that was one of those that you came home after school and watched. Yep.
We talked about how so many artists had their own TV show, from the Carpenters to Mac Davis, Johnny Cash, Glenn Campbell. The Helen Reddy Show debuted on NBC TV in 1973.
I can't believe she had her own show. I can't believe I ever watched it either.
I can't believe I watched the whole thing. 1975, Fame by David Bowie was released. The song Fame.
Fantastic record.
Soon. Coming up live by Paul McCartney and Wings. One of the few live recordings to ever reach number one was released in 1980. Hit number one in 1980 on this date. DJs preferred that version recorded in Glasgow, Scotland. We've talked
a little bit about
how many people are from Glasgow, Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
They preferred that, the DJs did, to the studio version released earlier in the spring. But coming up live, was a number one for Paul McCartney.
I remember.
I think he ditched the Wings by then.
I remember that, yeah. I think McCartney was pretty much a solo effort. And if I remember correctly, once the live version came, they stuck it kind of as a single into the album.
2010, almost a year after Michael Jackson's untimely death, his studded glove that he wore during the 1984 Victory Tour was sold at auction for a cool $190,000.
Wow, that's incredible.
It was not just a regular glove you buy at the store. This one was a Swarovski crystal studded glove. Almost $200,000 he fetched for that.
Incredible.
Or his estate did 11 years ago. Brand new segment, Frankie. We're going to track not only the music from 1967 to 82, but also album covers. This is one of your ideas, and I think it's a great one, too, because you learn so much from artists about what they were thinking with the album covers and the inner sleeve and the lyrics. So it's a whole fun thing to do while you're listening to the music, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Part of the fun of buying an album in that day and time was when you got home, you spent the whole afternoon listening to the album and, of course, reading all the liner notes and everything. Yeah.
A lot of times they didn't include lyrics, but it didn't matter.
Right, exactly.
It's just fun to open it up, especially if it was one of those that you opened up and you had something on each side to look at.
The gatefold.
Yeah,
definitely.
Even if it was just a single album. So what do you have from 1967?
Well, the first one, to nobody's surprise, is, of course, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. I don't think you could do this segment without mentioning them. The cover collage includes 57 photographs and 9 waxworks.
You mean they weren't all posing together as one?
They were not. It's a guide to the cultural topography of that decade, as somebody put it. It conveyed the increasing democratization of society, whereby traditional barriers between high and low culture were being eroded. Interesting enough, fearing controversy, there were a few that were rejected. Lenin's request for the images of Adolf Hitler and Jesus Christ were
somehow rejected.
And as you can finally figure out why, this was only about a year after that the big brouhaha over John saying that the Beatles were as big as Christ. Yeah. I mean, it was, I can't even believe he tried for it, but of course that was John Lennon.
Well, and people got the wrong idea. You know, he said, we're just a rock band.
That's right.
We're not Jesus Christ, for crying out loud.
But
I don't know if that's how
that's what he meant. That's what he meant. But, you know, everything, you know, they were the biggest thing in the world at that point. They really were.
Yeah, and hanging on every word they were saying.
Certainly.
And John
were.
Had such a personality, that kind of acerbic, dry sense of humor.
Absolutely.
You didn't always know how to take him.
No. Those got nixed. Harrison was gone out for Mahatma Gandhi, but they also nixed that. I'm not sure why. Would have seemed to be a natural. And when McCartney was asked why they didn't include Elvis Presley, he said it was because he was just too big. There was no need to put him on there because he was bigger than everyone in rock music.
Wow.
So I kind of thought that was neat. There are 5 people from the cover still living today. Interesting list. Of course, Ringo and Paul from the Beatles,
of course,
are still with us. Bob Dylan is on there, and he is still with us. A sculptor, Larry Bell, who I had never heard of, but he is still with us. And finally, Dion DiMucci, we just mentioned him. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. You might remember him for songs like Run Around Sue and The Wanderer.
But not Abraham, Martin, and John, because that hadn't yet been recorded.
That's true. You're absolutely right.
Oh, that's an interesting choice that they would have Dion DiMucci as opposed to, say, Frankie Valli or something.
Yeah, it's funny how they came up with these people. Like, they had Sonny Liston on there. Would have made sense to have Muhammad Ali on there, but no, they went with Sonny Liston. The album's lyrics were printed in full on the back cover. That's the first time it had ever been done in rock and roll. LP also included a bonus gift. that was a cardboard cutout, postcard-size portrait of Sergeant Pepper, and it's based on a statue from John Lennon's house that was used on the front cover. A fake mustache was in there, and two sets of sergeant stripes. This was all came with the original package, so kind of neat.
I wonder how long it took to come up with that idea. And talk about a concept album cover.
Exactly. Yeah, and they said they wanted to make the people feel like they were part of the Sgt. Pepper's band. The other one is an interesting one. One of my favorite albums from the time, Velvet Underground and Nico.
Oh, good one.
Now, the album cover for Velvet Underground and Nico is recognizable for featuring the Andy Warhol print of the banana. If you remember that came into play almost like the Campbell soup can. It was kind of all over the place. Early copies of the album invited the owner to peel slowly and see, and then peeling back the banana skin revealed a flesh-colored banana underneath. I don't know where they were going with that. Who knows? Mm-hmm. A special machine was needed to manufacture these covers. One which covered the album's delayed release, but MGM paid for the cost, figuring that any ties to Warhol would boost the sales of the album, which didn't really work because the album sold about 30,000 copies in the end. When the album was first issued, the main back cover, taken at a performance of Warhol's event Exploding Plastic Inevitable, contained an image of actor Eric Emerson projected on the wall behind the band. Having recently been arrested for drug possession and desperate for money, Emerson, of course, threatened to sue them over the unauthorized use of his image unless they paid him. Well, rather than pay him, MGM just recalled copies of the album and halted its distribution until Emerson's image could be airbrushed from... from the photo, to show how ridiculous things get, there was a 2012 lawsuit from the Velvet Underground Trust to the Andy Warhol Trust about the use of the banana image, even though I think Lou Reed and Andy Warhol were both dead at the time. That's why the trusts were involved.
Yeah.
So you can see how ridiculous things can get. And this was an album that, in its original printing, probably sold about 30,000 albums.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how the two albums you mentioned, so complex, yet this one was so simple.
And you would have thought that there would have been no big thing.
Yeah.
No.
You would think there'd be more trouble with lawsuits and whatnot from Sgt. Pepper's.
Absolutely. Yet 40 years after the fact, they were still suing each other.
Frankie, our top five albums, this time 1969. I'll give you mine, you give me yours. Let's start with you this time, your top five albums.
First one is one that kind of goes along with yours. I know you were looking at Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and this is by Young, Neil Young. It I believe it was his second solo album, but everybody knows this is Nowhere with Down by the River, Cinnamon Girl, and of course Cowgirl in the Sand. Just fantastic stuff.
Can't go wrong there.
He announced to the world that he was going to be an artist that would be reckoned with for the next 20 years, basically.
Did he ever say exactly, or do you know, to your knowledge, if he liked being in Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young?
I don't think he did. I don't think it was anything that he didn't like the fact that the other people called the shots or, the arguing that went along with having four talents and everybody wanting their record to be on the album and everybody wanting there to be a single, and that kind of thing. To me, it just never seemed natural to him.
Rod Stewart's kind of like that. Neil Young deserves to be a solo artist. He needs to be on his own.
Yeah. You think of the money that the four of them could have made if they could have stayed together and made five or six albums, but it just wasn't going to happen. And they ended up basically making one studio album and one live album, and that's really what we have of them. Next one, by our buddies from CCR, Green River. Yeah, they had three albums in 1969. This was one of them. I just kind of randomly picked Green River because I saw Green River was on there, obviously. Commotion, Bad Moon Rising, one of my favorites, and of course, Lodi. And it was their first number one album of all the things they did. This was the first one.
They had a good year that year, didn't they?
Oh, CCR, fantastic.
Three albums?
Yeah, we talk about everybody had an album out almost every year back then. Three in one year is ridiculous. It doesn't even make any sense. I mean, you would think that the record company would have been putting the brakes on.
Yeah, especially with all those double-sided hits of theirs.
Exactly. Next one, a group that doesn't get much run, but if you were alive at this time, every house you went to had Three Dog Night captured live at the Forum. It was just everybody had that record. I think it was the first big live album that really made the charts, kind of broke a band, had some great stuff on there like Eli's Coming, Easy to Be Hard, of course, One, Feeling All Right. They did everybody else's songs. They were not songwriters. They didn't try to be. So they had the luck, I guess, to just pick out some fantastic songs and do them. And this was a terrific record. Like I said, at the time, everyone had it. Next one is Led Zeppelin II. Again, a group that had two out this year. And boy, talk about flipping a coin. This is the one with Whole Lotta Love, which was their biggest hit. Thank Yous on here, Heartbreaker, Livin' Lovin' Made. I mean, geez, every song on the record is great. Another one, like the Cars that we talked about last episode, where you can just put the needle on the record and forget it, and just play it. Fantastic stuff. Finally, the second of the four albums that I like to call the classic period of Rolling Stones. This is Let It Bleed. Again, starts out with Gimme Shelter. Songs like Midnight Rambler, Monkey Man, and it ends up with You Can't Always Get What You Want. Again, fantastic stuff. They were really learning how to make records. They had matured past just a rhythm and blues band that was doing covers. It's fantastic stuff.
When was the first time you saw the Stones in concert?
That would probably have been 75?
Yeah, at the stadium.
75, yeah. Would have been
and
a stadium concert.
And then at the Coliseum.
Right, exactly.
How many times do you think you've seen them?
I want to say I've seen them four times. So I've seen them a lot, but I would have liked to have seen them a couple more times in there.
You still might. You still have the tickets for
I
that.
I guess there's still possibilities out there, although... Boy, they're getting old now. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but good grief.
You know, with COVID, they still have not canceled or even, well, I guess they postponed the concert that was set for last June, which you had tickets for.
That's right.
At First Energy Stadium where the Browns play. But they just never canceled it. They haven't announced any return date. But unlike a lot of other bands or venues, they have not canceled. I still have those tickets for you.
That's incredible.
When they reannounce the show date, I'll give them to you and off we go.
It's just amazing that after this long COVID break that they're still thinking about doing it again. Obviously, you know, we're talking a band that's hitting their 80s, literally. We're not talking about late 60s anymore. We're talking about 80s.
Well, Mick and Keith have known each other since 1950.
Exactly.
It's going back a ways.
Yeah, definitely.
71 years. Good choices, Frankie. For me, top five albums. Well, the Beatles, Abbey Road, that could have easily appeared on yours because that's
absolutely
one of your favorites of the Beatles.
I think it's one of my favorite of all time. Yeah.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. And side two with The End, that's just a heck of an album. I love Abbey Road. Sly and the Family Stone, I thought about this one. I didn't buy a lot of albums at the time, but if I was an album-buying man, that would have been one. Stand with an exclamation point. Everyday People's on there, which is still here all the time today.
Yep.
I want to take you higher. Sly and the Family Stone, great in concert, weren't they?
Fantastic. As long as Sly showed up, that, of course, was the big thing. You never knew whether he was going to show up to the concert or not. But when he did, fantastic live band and just what great work they had over those records. And this, of course, is one of their best.
Here's a band that picked up where Blood, Sweat, and Tears kind of left off, Chicago. And Chicago Transit Authority, again, could have easily made your top five. We probably had it on there, but, you know, we'd want to do a lot of overlapping. It's been an astounding 171 weeks on the Billboard Top 200 chart over the years.
That's incredible.
Beginnings. It's a four-sided album.
Mm-hmm. Who makes a debut album and puts out a double record?
And it really
the answer
off,
is yeah. nobody no, except well, Chicago.
It shows off their skills, too. They're improvisational, the jazz. They showed you what Chicago was and what was going to be.
Right.
Does anybody really know what time it is? Question 67 and 68, which is probably my favorite of theirs, at least early on. Chicago Transit Authority, great, great album. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, the self-titled album, the debut. Marrakesh Express, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, about Judy Collins.
Wow.
Released in May of 69, just prior to their performance, one of their first, which was at Woodstock, a couple of months later. And Zeppelin, The Flip a Coin, you chose two. I could have chosen that as well. I went ahead with the debut album only because Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, that 6 minute and 42 second classic, appears on that album, which you hear late at night, early in the morning when they have 6 minutes and 42 seconds to play it. But God, love that song.
There's another one on there, and I like to call it, if you ever want to hear where heavy metal came from, listen to How Many More Times on that record, because it is the definition of what heavy metal is supposed to be, which is the thunderous guitars put with blues.
Well, Led Zeppelin, what can you say? Good Times, Bad Times started out side one, and that began their career.
And some people still feel like that was their best song.
Yeah.
It was the first one on the first side of the first album.
Well, a lot can be said about maybe Take It Easy with the Eagles. That started first album.
Mm-hmm.
I Saw the Light, Todd Rundgren. Good way to jump out of the gate, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Frankie, I'm starting a record collection, not from scratch, but for a certain artist. And give me your thoughts on The Who.
Well, again, as with so many, they had different phases of their career, but I think the one that I would pick is a greatest hits collection called Meaty, Beaty, Big and Bouncy that was done right about 1970, 1971, which means it went up to the time of Tommy. It has basically the UK hits. They did have a few hits here, My Generation, I Can See for Miles. But, boy, some of the fantastic records that we really didn't get here, like The Kids Are All Right, I Can't Explain. Happy Jack was another one. Pictures of Lily, Substitute. Those were all singles for them, and they're all on this record. It's another one that has no weak cuts on it. You can just sit down and listen to it. Magic Bus is on there, too, so... I think that's where I would start because, again, you can go either way with it. They're just heading into their greatest record of all time, in my opinion, Who's Next. Or you can go back and you can search out some of those Roots records from the UK.
What was the name of that album again? One more time?
Meaty, Beaty, Big and Bouncy. Fantastic little hits collection. Like I say, it's mostly the UK hits from the 60s, which were kind of an unmined over here. Group of songs.
Weren't they having trouble with their record label? Weren't they thinking of maybe dumping them?
Absolutely. They couldn't. They really had a hard time breaking here in the States. Again, they had one big hit in the 60s, which was I Can See for Miles. But no, there were not a lot of hits other than that. And there were not any big albums until, of course, Tommy hit. And that was right at the end of the 60s.
Yeah. Then Who's Next? And yep, they were on their way.
They were.
One-hit wonder time, Frankie, as we begin season three. Remember the song Woodstock? It was written by Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
But the one by Matt...
Like the day after the thing went down, yeah.
Well, she was appearing on Dick Cavett instead of appearing at the show. I think that's
sure
her
right.
manager thought it would be a better move for her. She saw, wasn't she going out with somebody at the time, David Crosby or something?
Either him or Graham Nash, one of the boys.
So she wrote the song Woodstock and is performed by Crosby, Stills, and Nash, maybe, and Young, I don't recall. But
I think it was all four, yes.
It was also released by Matthews Southern Comfort, their one and only hit by Ian Matthews.
Yeah, it was such a big song that not just one, not just two, but three different people had to record it. And if I remember correctly, this was the one that was actually the hit.
Yeah, I liked it. You'll find it on the Have a Nice Day compilation album if they're still around. You can certainly download it. Matthews Southern Comfort. Ian Matthews had a hit called Shake It later on in like 1978,
okay,
disco era. So that was kind of a cool tune. I liked his version of Woodstock. I thought it was very good. I was hoping for more from them, but didn't hear it.
Yeah, it's a very good version. Of course, it's a great song. It's hard to go wrong with it, but it was a fun song, and I remember it being out, you know, in like 1970, yeah.
The Five Stair Steps came out with Ooh Ooh Child. Remember that one? Good little
R&B
tune.
Things are going to get easier, yeah.
Love it.
Good tune, fun tune. Who knows what happened to them?
The R&B group from Chicago, The Five Stair Steps, had a lot of singles, but that was the best one of the bunch. It hit number 6 in the nation in the spring or early summer of 1970, and that was it. Their next one, called America Standing, only made it to number 83, and that wasn't until 1970 in the fall. But they really couldn't follow up on that, even though they started recording in 1966. But the Chicago group kind of ran out of steam after Ooh Ooh Child.
Yeah, they do sound like a Motown group, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
Frankie, we've been looking forward to this day. Our featured artist is Santana, Carlos Santana, one of my favorites of all time. You?
Fantastic. What a guitar player. I think the highest form of praise I can give him is that literally he can play 2 or 3 notes, and I'll know exactly who he is. And that's very unusual for any player of anything, let alone a guitar.
Born in Mexico, 1947, learned to play the guitar at age 8. His father was a mariachi musician, but needed to find some work that paid consistently, so moved the family to San Francisco, and was kind of the guiding force behind Carlos's early musicianship. And then, so Carlos started the Santana Blues Band in 1965, right, in 66. He was involved in that Bay Area music scene and early influences, Richie Valens, T-Bone Walker, B.B. King, John Lee Hooker, caught the eye of Bill Graham, the entrepreneur, impresario.
Yeah.
You know, I just saw Bill Graham. He plays Charlie Lucky Luciano in the film Bugsy. It was just on recently. It's a really good movie by, Warren Beatty and Annette Bening and them. But Bill Graham was killed in a helicopter crash coming home from a Huey Lewis in the News concert in 1991, just before the release of the film Bugsy. But he's really good in that movie.
Oh, yeah. He's terrific. He's an impresario, I guess you would say, of music.
That's a good way to put it. He was the guiding force behind so many bands, especially out there on the West Coast. He got the Fillmore West and Fillmore East started.
That's right.
Even though they only had a short amount of time in business, but still a lot of great concerts were played there. Light Carlos, right from the start, changed that name or shortened it to just plain old Santana. Signed him to appear at Woodstock, the Music and Art Festival.
That's right.
In August of 69, hadn't even released an album yet.
They had not released an album, and I guess they took Chicago's place. He was also part of that outfit and just kind of chose Santana, maybe because their debut album was going to come out.
Well, they made the documentary film mainly because of that 11-minute performance, the instrumental number Soul Sacrifice.
Oh, incredible.
You know, Santana would delight the crowd there, and then seizing on the opportunity, released that debut album later on in August, hit number 4 in the States. You know, I bet you a lot of people, if they still had any money or energy left on the way home from Woodstock, probably stopped by the album store or record store and bought that album.
Talk about product placement. Literally, they played Woodstock, and that week, their first album's out, and, you know, everybody's fresh off that performance, and like you said, Soul Sacrifice, fantastic stuff.
Talked before about lead singer Greg Raleigh, who would then join up with a future Santana member and guitar whiz Neil Sean, who joined the band Santana in 1971. Greg Raleigh was in it before that and was lead singer for Oye Como Va, Black Magic Woman, Evil Ways, which was on that debut album.
And they were all so young at that time. Like you said, Carlos was 22. His drummer, Michael Shreve, who's featured, obviously, in Soul Sacrifice, had just turned 20, of all things. So these were a bunch of kids out there.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me how good they sounded.
And they've had a lot of members come and go, a lot of featured artists on there as well, which we'll talk about in a minute. Abraxas featured the singles Black Magic Woman, Oye Como Va, spent 6 weeks at the top of the charts a year later.
Wow. Incredible song, record. I remember going out and buying it. when it was first new. One of the few that I actually got the week it came out.
So I think we talked about if you're going to start a record collection, either one of those would be a good way to start with Santana.
Ooh, fantastic
stuff. They've been around forever. In 1971, Santana 3 came out, released in September of that year, again number one in the Billboard album chart, was the last one to feature all the members of the band that performed at Woodstock a couple of years earlier. You recall Tom Coster on keyboards would stay with the band until 1978, then rejoin in 1983. Greg Raleigh was moving on, Neil Sean was there, and then he went to with Greg to form Journey in the San Francisco area. 1973 brought Welcome, released in November. By then, Greg had left the band, and an experimental album, didn't produce any hits. Lotus was a live album a year later, recorded in Japan. Wasn't released here in the United States, though, Lotus, until 1991. Do you remember any of their live albums?
The one I bought was one called Sacred Fire, which was more into the 90s by the time that happened. I don't think that charted at all, or if it did, it charted very... It was during their down period, to be
honest. Yeah, they had a down period, and they had a huge comeback later on. 1974, 5 years in, Greatest Hits album, released in July, did very well. Greatest Hits, Santana, now certified 7-time platinum album.
Wow.
Barbaletta, October 1974, featured a lot of new artists playing on the album. We talked about, you know, how some artists would come and go, and some would be featured, like Stanley Clark, who played guitar on 4 of those tunes.
Yeah, he was very much into jazz and what they call world music. When other people talked about it, he was playing.
Yeah, Stanley Clark, great bass guitarist. Amigos, 1976, you know, putting out an album or more every year or so.
Every year.
Released in March of 76, produced this time around by David Robinson, not the David Robinson we know from basketball, but it was not produced by Carlos Santana. David did a lot of work with Herbie Hancock, a lot of work. He goes all the way back to the early 60s with his work, and get this amount of this list of people that David Robinson has worked with over the years, besides Herbie Hancock, Pointer Sisters, Elvin Bishop, Patti LaBelle, producer, arranger, and engineer, had quite a career. Let It Shine, the instrumental classic Europa. Amigos is celebrating its 45th anniversary of its release this year. And I was looking at the Santana.com website. You can order some really cool things, including that album, Amigos.
Oh, I bet you can.
You can get the album, you can get the CD, and also a limited edition t-shirt. Then Frankie, 1977 Festival. And then came Moonflower, which had some live tracks on there and some studio stuff too, including that really cool cover version of the Zombies hit She's Not There, sung by Greg Walker, who was in the band for a few years.
That's a fantastic.
Isn't that a great tune?
Yeah, that is really, if you ever want to dig out a classic track, go for it. That's a deep track that is well worth having.
Inner Secrets, 1978, showcased a move away from his jazz and fusion work and more toward straight-ahead rock and roll. Carlos was not afraid to experiment with other genres or other artists. 5 singles were released from Inner Secrets, but nothing really charted except for Stormy, which was the only one that hit the top 40 in early 1979. I don't remember that song or the album.
I was going to say, is that a remake of the Classics?
Classics 4?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Could be.
1979 brought us Marathon, co-produced by famous producer Keith Olsen, who by then had been working with Fleetwood Mac, and, you know, he co-produced the Fleetwood Mac album in 1975. Z-Bop came out in April of 81. That had the song which hit number 17 that year, Winning.
Winning, yeah. Good song.
I like Winning. I'm not crazy about it. There are other songs I like better, but it was a good tune. Shango in 1982 in August reunited the band with former member Greg Raleigh, who would co-produce along with Carlos and Bill Simzik. Hold On, that was a good tune.
Hold On. Yeah, I remember
number
that.
Number 15 on the Billboard Hot Chart in 82. Then came Viva Santana, Freedom, Spirits in the Dancing, Dancing in the Flesh. Took a little break, a little 7-year break, a little lull in their career, and Carlos's career. Then came 1999 and Supernatural.
Wow, and what a comeback that was.
Well, when you have Rob Thomas of Matchbox 20 and Clive Davis teaming up for that more radio hit-friendly song, Smooth.
Yeah.
Just an amazing commercial success was that album, 15-time platinum.
Yeah, I would say probably most of the records they sold were based on that album and those singles, yeah.
People
definitely
younger, like your daughter, my daughter, my son, were exposed to the Santana. Who is this guy? He sounds great. I know Rob Thomas, but I'm going to pick up some Santana.
My daughter went to a Santana concert, I remember, that summer at Blossom.
Supernatural won 8 Grammy Awards, including Album of the Year. It was number 1 in 11 countries. The album also features work by Dave Matthews, Lauryn Hill, CeeLo Green, Wyclef Jean, Eric Clapton, even a guy named Mike Porcaro. The middle
Where
brother.
Have you heard that name before?
Jeff and Steve all played with Toto, including Mike. And sure. Mike played bass guitar on the track Primavera. Supernatural, great album.
Fantastic.
I think I have the CD. I'm pretty sure I do.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't listened to it for a while, but now I think I'm going to get it out and pop it in there.
Absolutely.
6 albums would follow. 6 albums after that would follow by Santana, including one released in 2019 called Africa Speaks, their 25th studio album. What a career.
They're still at it.
It's just amazing.
Well, yeah, he's kind of made it a workshop where I think he invites players to come in and play with him, because there is no, if you look at all the people that have played with him over the years, there's no rhyme nor reason to it. Just because you play it on one album doesn't mean you play it on the next one. And so I think that it's become kind of a workshop where people come in, they do a couple albums, and then they're on their way to other things.
And keep in mind, Santana will be taking the stage with Earth, Wind, and Fire. They're going back on tour with a bunch of rescheduled dates. They'll be at the Riverbend Music Center in Cincinnati on July 9th, that's a Saturday, 2022. Not this year, but next year. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, 1998, deservedly so. And our featured artists this week, Santana. Jazz, fusion, Latin rock, psychedelic rock, blues. They've been around for 55 years. Going strong. Carlos Santana, absolute genius on the guitar. And talking about giving, too. And I like the workshop comment that you made. It's true. There's literally dozens and dozens of artists, great ones, who take part in these albums.
Absolutely. And ones that you would be surprised. You named a lot of them, but there's a whole lot you didn't name. And to go back and look at some of the names and just see where some of these people have been before and after, it's fantastic stuff.
Can you imagine on stage with Earth, Wind, and Fire? We talked about how great that show was with Chicago.
Sure, absolutely.
Them backing up Carlos Santana and the gang? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Featured artist this week, Santana. Frankie, thanks so much for being a part. Love your input.
Thanks for having me.
Here's a preview of Season 3. In a couple of weeks from now, be sure to join us on Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations as we welcome my longtime friend and one-time fellow DJ, Tim Doherty, who's been a PD and air personality at WONE 97.5 in Akron, the home of rock and roll since its beginnings in the mid-80s. And we're going to talk all about his time there and one of our favorite bands, Led Zeppelin. He knows as much about Zeppelin as just about anybody. Next week, be sure to be here, because Mark Farner, one of the founding members of Grand Funk Railroad, the lead guitarist and vocalist, who wrote a lot of their songs too, will be here as our special guest. We'll also have some brand new features as Season 3 progresses. I think you'll find it to be a lot of fun. And a new segment called Bands We Wanted to Hear More From, like Three Dog Night and BTO and Guess Who and Bad Company. So join us as Season 3 continues on Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations featuring rock and roll expert Frank Ost. We'll see you next week.